then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush your vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I've heard orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night, many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's February the 17th, 2011. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen, far above their shining weapons on their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And hurrah, my voice for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon.
We have no Edgar Steele update as such this week. There's something that may be shaking and moving there, but it's just internet rumor so far, and so I won't repeat it. If it's true, it's a disturbing development, but I won't add any fuel to the fire, so I'll just keep quiet for the moment. The fat lady is about to sing in Coeur d'Alene, and I don't want to interrupt her. I got some interesting responses from last week's section on littering, i.e. distributing leaflets. This one comes from Eric in Poland, who, by the way, is an American who's teaching over there. Dear HAC, I was listening to one of the podcasts about littering, and you stated no one ever came into this movement because they read a leaflet. They came into the movement only after a spiritual awakening, or words to that effect. I have to agree. My path to awakening was long and arduous. I came damn close in college to completely turning my back on my race. 10 years at university in the States in a liberal field, history will do that to you. But once I opened my eyes to the PC crap that abounds in academics and had that filtered into the real world, I realized what was going on, and my awakening slowly occurred. The Northwest Front is the only group I feel truly dedicated to the 14 words. While I don't agree with you on everything, I agree that your contention on the delusion of Beaver Cleaverville is quite dangerous and counterproductive to the cause. Sorry for the incoherent babble. When you're a TEFL teacher, you have a tendency to pick up on your students' bad habits. Signed, Eric. And by the way, if I'm wrong about that, if some of you out there did come around and permanently become active with the movement because you happened to read a leaflet that you found on your lawn or in a laundromat or someplace like that, by all means, guys, tell me. I've never heard of that happening, but, you know, I don't know everything. I could be wrong. I'm always interested in how people actually do become racially aware, how they do end up joining the movement. And if you want to tell your story, this might be a good place for it, so let me hear from you on that. Here's another email of the kind that I always like to get. This one's from Mark in Illinois, and the header was just, "Yes. All right, Harold, you convinced me, along with whatever else is happening in my life, to come to the homeland. I have a specific job specialty that I have to find employment for before I go. In other words, I have to have a job offer, and I have no money saved up to get an apartment when I get there." There's the stickler. I'm not exactly the young dudes that come with nothing but a t-shirt on their back, but pretty close. I have a custody hearing for my son on March the 6th. After that, I'm free to go. I'll head out on the internet first looking for a position in my field. If I'm lucky, someone will phone interview me. I doubt if they'll fly me out. We'll see. My field is business intelligence, data warehousing. I'll have to head towards Seattle to find employment. Would it do any good to send you a resume? Do you have business contacts? Somehow I think not. Grin. I've done this before, my friend, 25 years ago. Packed my bags and headed for Seattle not knowing anyone. I think I can do it again. Signed, Mark. Look, guys, when you want to come out here, we can give you and we will give you virtually every kind of help or assistance that you need, short of actual money and accommodation, which we can't give you because we can't afford to do so. But beyond that, any practical assistance that you need in finding a job, finding various facilities, things that you need, finding places to go and things to do, what you need to do, so forth and so on, anything that you need a friend or a contact right here on the ground for, that we can provide. I know I've probably given the impression that we're totally lost and sad sacks here in the Northwest and we can't even, you know, tie our own shoelaces. That's not quite true. It's true we can't give you a bunkhouse and a refrigerator full of beer like Aryan Nations did, because we don't have that. And probably we shouldn't be doing that even if we could. But we do have people on the ground here, and we are willing to help in virtually any way that you need help, like I said, other than actual cash or accommodation. And that can count for a lot. So when you make your decision to come on to the homeland, let us know. You know, we'll give you a hand. You're not doing it alone. Now, here's another email from a guy whom I'll refer to simply as Mike, because I don't want to jam his own migration up in any way. Dear Mr. Covington, I am in the last few days of preparations to make my migration to the Kalispell Primary Settlement area. This email is to inform you that I'm willing to help the cause in whatever way I can. My fiancée is also accompanying me, and she is with child. We're not a wealthy couple, but we get by. I had decided to come home before even coming across your website or even the Kalispell website, but both have been a wealth of advice and comfort in a stressful time. I await each new Radio Free Northwest podcast, and I firmly believe that the work you do is very important. I've encouraged other like-minded friends, and even some who aren't fully aware yet, to view this website and perhaps even make the move. Our homecoming should be around the 3rd of March. Feel free to contact me via email or here at nwf.net. Thanks you for your time and your effort for our people. Signed, well, we'll just call him Mike. I have mentioned these last two emails just to show you folks out there that, yes, it is happening. I'm not just totally sitting here talking to myself. It's happening way, way too slow for my taste, but it is happening. The mountain is starting to move. This is midwinter. Hopefully in the summer and the fall, when the weather gets better, we'll see a lot more scouting trips and a lot more actual relocations. Eventually, we're going to have proper communities here. Like I said, it's just taking too damn long. Now, some of you have asked me for an update on the legal situation regarding the murder of our comrade Jeff Hughes in Vancouver back in October of 2009. Well, the news is that there isn't any news. I got an email from Paul Fromm, who's liaising with attorney Doug Christie, and he tells me that Doug says they just keep postponing the whole issue up there in the Great White North. There are two legally mandated hearings under Canadian law that have to happen, or at least according to what their statute book says. Now, one is the inquest. As I thought, an inquest in any non-medical, non-natural causes death in Canada is required by law. And second, there's a hearing that is supposed to take place whenever a person is killed by police gunfire, and that hasn't taken place either. Neither of these legally required processes have happened yet, and the RCMP apparently don't even bother to answer Christie's letters or emails anymore. Basically, they pumped 10 bullets into Jeff Hughes's body. They walked away from it, and nobody intends to do a damn thing about it, except for us. When we create a Northwest American Republic that includes British Columbia, when we do all that stuff that I can't talk about in public, and when we rename the main drag in Vancouver Jeff Hughes Avenue. That's what's going to happen in the death of Jeff Hughes. It's going to take years, maybe a generation, but it's going to happen. This next question comes from Marius in Massachusetts. Dear Harold, what's the Northwest Front's position towards Arabs and Islam in general? I know that we have a common enemy. Well, that's a short question, Marius, and it's going to require a very long answer. Now, I've had a lot of spurious accusations leveled against me by the Knights who say V-Bulletin down through the years, to the effect that I, quote-unquote, spread division, and it's made me a bit gun-shy when a genuinely divisive issue arises, but this is a legitimate question, and so I'll tackle it head-on. But first, I need all of you to do something. I need for you to decide once and for all in your own minds whether or not your involvement in this thing of ours is based on the love of our own and fear for the continued existence of our own people, or whether it's based on blind and unthinking hatred for members of other races. Now, if it's that last, I can dig it. God knows we have reason enough to despise anyone with skin the color of shit. But in my case, I really am motivated purely by the 14 words of David Lane, and you have to bear that in mind when you listen to my answer. Now, about 11 years ago, I got into a somewhat similar situation. This was before the Northwest Ideal and before the podcast and so forth and so on. I was still living in Texas at the time. Now, I refer to our little teapot tempest at the time of the Elian Gonzalez episode, when I was accused of being pro-mestizo for reasons which, in my view, were not rational. But anyway, does anybody remember that? You remember the Elian Gonzalez thing? If not, I don't have time to go into it now, so Google it. Anyway, at that time, I ventured to suggest to my internet list of the period that when armed federal SWAT teams break into a private home and kidnap a child on the orders of the highest federal law enforcement officer in the land, in this case Janet Reno, then that child's race is irrelevant, and that this is a sinister development regarding the ongoing federal abuse of power that concerns us all. Oh, my God, you would have thought I'd pissed in the punch bowl. There are still some to this day who denounce me as a quote-unquote Jew, not sure where that comes from, and a spick lover, because I dared to suggest 11 years ago that just maybe children being dragged out of their homes by federal gangsters with machine guns was something that we ought to be concerned about on general principles. Now, in view of our current two brushfire wars being waged against Muslim countries, and the likelihood of an attack on Iran, which may end up destroying the world economy, the answer to Marius's question is far more serious than the fate of one little Cuban mestizo. Now, before I proceed, I need to throw in one caveat, the same one that applies to a lot of what I say on this show. I'm speaking from an American viewpoint. I understand that our European comrades have a much different slant on this, and I understand how they can legitimately hold some of the views that they do. Now, to white Europeans, Muslims are the immediate physical threat to their existence as nations and as a race. They are the threat that are most visible every day on the streets, just like Mexicans are here. And I understand that, so I don't expect Europeans to be 100% in agreement with what I'm going to say here. Now, in 2003, the United States of America launched a completely unprovoked war of invasion and conquest against another country. This time, there was not even so much as a legal fig leaf for this naked and unadorned act of pure brigandage. The American invasion of Iraq had nothing whatsoever to do with the events of 9/11, or with Saddam Hussein's mythical weapons of mass destruction. I heard all of Bush and Cheney's babble at the time on the reasons for the war, and it's all purist bullshit. The true purpose of these wars of conquest is threefold. First off, to seize control of the Basra oil fields and also the Central Asian oil pipeline in Afghanistan for the personal benefit of the Bush family and their cronies in the big oil industry, and to set the stage for a third or fourth war of conquest if necessary to seize the oil fields in Iran and Saudi Arabia. That last part hasn't come about yet, but the troops are now positioned to attack Iran and Saudi if it becomes necessary in order to secure the oil. Secondly, the purpose of these wars is to begin the process of destroying all of Israel's enemies in the Middle East and give the Jews an excuse to, quote-unquote, transfer, i.e. drive 3 million Palestinians out of their homes on the West Bank and Gaza and into Jordan and Egypt as refugees, thus setting the stage for, quote-unquote, greater Israel. Many people don't know that the two blue bars on the Israeli flag above and below the Star of David stand for Between the Rivers, the Nile and the Euphrates, the lands that the Jews demand for greater Israel. Finally, one major purpose of these wars in the Middle East is to humiliate and degrade Islam in the name of Looney Tune Christian fundamentalism, which, at the time it all started, was the kind of individual that we had in power in the White House. Basically, under the second Bush regime, the White House was being run by Jews, by neoconservatives, and by the late great Planet Earth crowd. The current Obama regime is so god-awful that even after only a few short years, we tend to forget just how absolutely ghastly Jugear's Bush and his little neocon friends were. Barack Hussein Obama has accomplished something that I used to think would be impossible. He's made George W. Bush look good by comparison. The above state of affairs was made possible by a truly unholy alliance in our government between big oil, Zionism, and wigged-out Christian fundamentalism. Like I say, it's the late, great Planet Earth crowd. And for those of you who don't get that reference, look up a book called The Late, Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. Read that book and you'll figure out where all our neocon Christian Zionist fruitcakes get their nuts. I should confess, by the way of mea culpa, that in November of 2000, I actually supported Bush myself in the face of the Democrats' blatant attempt to steal the presidential election through jiggery-pokery in Florida. At that time, I thought Bush was a simpleton and a doofus, controlled by big business. But at least he had to be better than another 4 years of Clintonism. Ooh, boy, little did I know. Has anyone besides me noticed that these presidents we keep on putting in the Oval Office just keep on getting worse and worse and worse? I'm sorry, I'm digressing again. There's another thing that I remember from back during the first big Iraq attack in 1990, and it's more to the point of Marius' question. At that time, I remember seeing a TV news clip of some good old boys marching down the street in Lewisburg, North Carolina, baseball caps on and beer bellies all a-jiggle. And they were carrying signs that said, "Bomb Iran back into the Stone Age." Well, just one problem. We were about to attack Iraq, not Iran. Now, the fact that up until a year before, Saddam's Iraq had been our valiant ally against the dreaded Persians was so far over their heads that I never even bothered to try and explain it to any of them. Remember that passage from Orwell's 1984, "Oceania is at war with Eurasia"? Oceania has always been at war with Eurasia. Now, these idiots not only didn't know the difference between Iran and Iraq, they didn't even care. They didn't know a Jew from a juice master. They had no idea that the real reason behind big Iraq attack was that Bush 1 was afraid that his family's oil properties in Bahrain would be threatened, and that cutting Iraqi oil off the market would drive up the price and put many more millions into the Bush family's pockets. Pardon the expression, stupid redneck numbnuts could think about was bomb, 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 kill, kill, kill the wogs, so long as they themselves didn't have to fight and they could watch it all on TV. Yes, here at long last was some kind of socially acceptable violence against people with dark skins that they could engage in, vicariously, of course. They could laugh at it and holler over it and crow about it, without running into the wall of political correctness that forbids white males from uttering even the most tentative, timorous peep against any protected dark minority. Of all the dark minorities, the Muslims in this country are probably the most powerless, and we're not free to criticize or attack the dark-skinned minorities in America who are doing the real damage. But now, all of a sudden, there was one dark-skinned minority, Muslims, who were no longer protected, against whom years of thoroughly justified white rage and white hate and white bitterness at the loss of our country to mud people could safely and openly be vented. Now, these white dumbasses didn't care why. All of a sudden, they just knew that they could lash out against certain people with dark skins not only safely, but with a measure of the social and peer approval that the white male craves above all else. I've said it before and I'll say it again, people. White men can still be racist and violent and proactive and brave, but they have to have a permission slip from the Jews first. Well, after 9/11, for a brief time, white males got their permission slip. Now, the lesson was not lost on the neocons, and I think it's very much part of the neocon and Zionist master plan. It's said that every society has to have a scapegoat. In view of the rising unemployment, the crumbling stock market, the collapsing infrastructure, corporate corruption scandals, and the increasing social dysfunction, all of a sudden we have the war on terror and a dark-skinned minority who can now be safely vented against, all our frustrations channeled against, while the Jew remains in the background, behind the curtain, pulling the strings and manipulating the smoke and the mirrors. This is what's happening in Europe with outfits like the BNP and the English Defense League. With them, it's all Muslim, 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 and never any mention of the Jew, never any mention of race per se. And I understand from some of our European contacts that the English Defense League actually has Jewish leaders who are out directing the chorus, so to speak, in the streets there. Now, one way to tell a so-called modernized racial nationalist group is that there are two groups of people you will never hear criticized by either neoconservatives or modernizers, as we call ourselves, or some of them call themselves, either in this country or in Europe, and that's Jews and queers. A.K. Chesterton once said, "If they don't name the Jew, their message isn't true." I think sometimes there ought to be a corollary to that. If they don't bash the poof, their message ain't the truth, or some such like that. Okay, I'm babbling again. This is already running long, and we still have quite a way to go, so I'll avoid the temptation to go off on a long dissertation here and try to drag myself back to the point. But before we do that, let's get to our first music break. I normally don't play a lot of really old stuff from the 1930s because the recording quality is generally just too poor. It's scratchy and tinny, and all the male singers sound like castrati because there was something about those old mono stand mics that always seemed to record the male voice about 2 octaves higher than it was in real life. You see and hear this a lot in old newsreel films of the Third Reich. The quality of the film and the sound simply doesn't convey the sheer power of the real thing. Americans are spoiled from years of high technology. We expect a lot better. And when I try to get somebody to actually listen to something from the 1930s in a cultural or a racial context, all they hear is the scratchy, tinny sound quality. But I'm going to make an exception here for a group from the North Georgia mountains called Gid Tanner and the Skillet Lickers, one of the first hillbilly bands. They featured an authentic, blind hillbilly guitarist named Riley Puckett. The Skillet Lickers were kind of a forerunner of Nashville and the Grand Ole Opry. You ever see that movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where the escaped prisoners form a band called the Soggy Bottom Boys? Well, Gid Tanner and the Skillet Lickers were kind of like that. This comes from a recording session back in 1931, and it's called Run Nigger Run. I know it's kind of hard to understand the words here because of the poor 1930s sound quality, but if you listen closely, you can hear Tanner singing, Run Nigger Run, the Patteroller Gonna Get You. Now, do you remember a few months ago when I played the Patteroller song by Robin and Linda Williams, and I explained to you at that time what a patteroller was? It was the old slave patrols in the South that kept the niggers in their cabins and on the plantation after dark. Interesting that a folk song from that time in our history with the words, Run, nigger, run, the patteroller gonna get you, would survive into the 1930s, long enough to be actually recorded. Now bear in mind that the grandfathers and maybe even some of the fathers of the men you hear singing this song actually fought for the South during the war. I myself, when I was growing up, never to my knowledge met an actual Civil War veteran, but I knew plenty of people who had met them growing up, including my grandparents. These events aren't anywhere near as far off in the remote past as liberals want us to think.
Run, nigga, run, will you better get away?
Wandering back in the general direction of Marius's question about Muslims, as you may have noticed, I oppose the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for both racial and political reasons, and I've made that clear down through the years. Now, this has gotten me in hot water periodically from idiots in the movement who claim that I'm in some way pro-Muslim or quote-unquote a raghead lover, whatever the hell that is. Okay, let's start with the basics. Now, let's assume that my entire career for the past 40 years never happened. Let's assume that my entire life doesn't demonstrate what I believe about race, and so therefore I have to justify myself to morons who tap on computer keyboards and write blogs under anonymous names so nobody really knows who they are, what their agenda is, or who's signing their checks. Let's for a moment pretend that we take these idiots seriously. Now here's a basic statement of my own beliefs on the subject. Do I believe Arabs to be our racial equals? No, I do not. Do I believe Arabs and Muslims should be in this country running all the subways and filling up the white high school girls they hire for counter help? No, I do not. Do I believe that Arabs should be knocking up dumbass white bimbos, marrying them to get green cards, and then running off with the half-breed kids to Jordan or Egypt? No on the knocking up and the marriage, because they shouldn't be here at all, and race mixing is always wrong, but yes on the running away to the Middle East with the half-breeds once the foul deed is done. However, I might go so far as to add that in most of these cases, the Arab fathers have stated to Islamic courts back in their homelands that their reason for fleeing America with their children was because they didn't want their sons to grow up as bird-brained Beavises with their caps on backwards, good for nothing except playing computer games, and they didn't want their daughters to grow up to be drug-addicted sluts. And for that, I don't blame these Arab guys one damn bit. As ironic as it sounds, if you're going to have half-breed Muslim Christian children, then they're probably better off growing up in a Muslim country than here. Now, do I believe that Arabs and Muslims should be here at all? No, I do not. Do I believe that we have the right to invade Muslim countries, brutalize and humiliate them, and steal their oil in order to line the pockets of Bible-bashing Texas oil company executives and to remove any threat to the bandit state of Israel? No, I do not believe that. Do I believe that we owe the Palestinian people, brown though they may be, respect and moral support in their heroic battle against Israel? Yes, I do. When our young white men display the same level of courage and commitment and idealism and self-sacrifice in gaining our own country here in the Northwest as the young men of Palestine have demonstrated over the past 70 years, then we'll have the right to sneer at them and look down on them for being brown. Until then, if we can't say something nice, we shouldn't say anything at all. The Palestinians kill Jews. We don't. Right now, that makes them a hell of a lot better than us. Do I believe that a man like a typical Palestinian father of four, who straps on an explosive belt around his waist, goes into Tel Aviv and gives up his own life so that his children might one day be free to live as Muslims in their own land, is a better man than the so-called Aryan warrior who swills beer, flashes his cool tattoos, talks big and brave from behind his computer, and then screams for me to remove him from the list when I accidentally hit CC instead of BCC and I reveal his email address to the rest of the list? That happens a lot. Yes, as a matter of fact, I do think that the Palestinian is better than such a so-called mighty Aryan warrior. Do I believe that as a mark of respect for the unimaginable suffering that this small nation of dark-skinned people is undergoing at the hands of the Jews, who are the enemies of all mankind, we should at least do them the courtesy of refraining from calling them sand niggers and towel heads and other racial slurs? Yes, I do. In their case, courtesy costs nothing and they've earned it. Now, we need to be smart enough to see the little man behind the curtain who is putting these ideas into our heads, the little Jew behind the curtain. Now, in view of the fact that every bullet, every bomb, every electric cattle prod, every bulldozer, and every Jewish settlement is paid for with American tax dollars, do I believe that the Arabs and the Muslims are entirely justified in viewing America as an enemy? Yes, I do. Should we be concerned about possible attacks on this country triggered by acts that American troops are committing against Muslims in their own lands? I mean real acts of retaliation, not the ones the FBI makes up, like the so-called Times Square bomber who never actually bombed anything. Yes, I think that's a legitimate concern. Most so-called Muslim terrorism is simply crap that the FBI makes up in order to justify their existence and harvest those federal budget dollars. But is there a chance that one day the Muslims really will strike back at us? Yes, definitely, that's a legitimate concern. Do I believe that there are many unanswered questions about exactly what happened on September 11th, 2001, and that at the very least we need to treat that as a case of the jury still being out rather than swallowing our government's official version wholesale? Yes, I do believe that. Is it possible that 9/11 was a black op designed to give the war party an excuse to launch a campaign of world conquest and oil seizure? I find that to be a distinct possibility. I'm not going to get into the whole 9/11 truth thing on here because once we get into it, that's a subject that tends to obsess our people to the exclusion of everything else, and that's a trap that the Northwest Front needs to avoid, obsessions of any kind, single-issue politics of any kind. But suffice it to say that the 9/11 truth movement is kind of like the Holocaust. If ever we can somehow get enough people to understand that the whole thing was a politically motivated hoax originated by Israel, then we would accomplish something major, but we're just never going to be allowed to break through that barrier because the stranglehold the system media have on the subject is simply too all-inclusive. Now, this old idea about how the truth will set you free is horse dung. The truth won't set anybody free if no one is allowed to know the truth, and if any public discussion of the truth is forbidden. So boil it all down. In other words, are we bombing and killing completely innocent people for no reason other than to protect Israel and steal the oil? Oh, yes. Marius, you wanted to know what I think about Muslims. Well, having ranted and raved for half an hour on the subject, let me summarize in 25 words or less. They have no right to be here, and we have no right to be there. Neither do we have the right to bomb them, murder them, kill their children, invade their countries, insult their religion, put up Starbucks and Burger Kings on every corner in Baghdad and Gaza and wherever, and steal their oil. We white people are the mud people's superiors. We are not their owners. Now, if we want their oil, we need to pay them a fair price for it, dump Israel, stop murdering and bombing them, stop propping up the Jews, and let the Muslims take care of the problem themselves, which they would do in very short order if it weren't for that American lifeline that keeps Tel Aviv alive. Pull the American lifeline, and Israel wouldn't last for a year. There you go. Middle East crisis solved. Now, I do understand a few things. I understand that some of you may find this attitude of mine entirely too tolerant, which seems an odd description to apply to a lifelong National Socialist, but there it is. Now, I've noticed down through the years that every white racialist has his own personal racial bugaboos, or jigaboos, or whatever you want to call them, especially in the South. We get old Klan types for whom it will always be nigger, 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 and all this Jew stuff is just a distraction by Nazis. Nazis is socialists. Nazis is communists. They want to destroy our Bible. Now, for Californians and Texans, the scourge will always be Mexicans. That's understandable enough. They live right in the path of the invasion. In Canada, it's Indians and Pakis. I knew a Swede once who literally frothed at the mouth at the very mention of gypsies. With me, it used to be niggers when I was in high school. And then I joined the NSWPP and I did the duty desk at Franklin Road. And I took those hate calls coming from those New York Jews. And I heard pure evil coming out of that phone receiver. Now, from that point on, for me, it has always been the kike that makes my skin crawl on a personal level. I admit this, people, straight up. I know we have a lot of enemies around the world, and I don't want to downplay their importance. Not at all. But for me, personally, numero uno on my personal shit list will always be the Jews. That's just me, but it's something you need to understand about me when you hear me talking on here. But for some, especially in Europe, it's Arabs. It's Muslims. I understand this, especially in our comrades from European countries who are surrounded by them due to the unlimited immigration from Morocco and Algeria and Turkey, etc. Germany, Holland, Sweden, God help them, Britain. Again, I say I can understand why a European can't go along with some of the things I'm saying. And I repeat that I'm speaking here as an American to Americans. Now, that's as it should be, because America is the problem. We're the ones who started these insane wars of conquest that'll impact on the whole world in generations to come. But there are some Americans, as I'm learning, to whom an Arab or a Muslim is simply the ultimate in third world horror. This especially applies to veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. I get it, believe me. A lot of veterans of my own Vietnam generation still get the heebie-jeebies in the presence of any Asian, Japanese, or Korean, or whoever. It's perfectly understandable that an Iraq or Afghanistan veteran won't have a tolerant view of Muslims, and I'm surprised that so many of them I've met, both personally and online, are able to talk about the war and the reasons behind it and 9/11 truth so objectively and intelligently. The very thought of a Muslim causes some of these people to fall down in a frothing epileptic seizure. I know because I've gotten the email equivalents of some of these seizures, and they can be pretty rough. Guys, you know what I'm trying to do here. I am desperately, frantically, in agony, trying to get you people to come to this unspeakably beautiful land here in the Northwest and make it a home for all our people. I am not concerned with killing anyone, except insofar as that will eventually become necessary for the survival of my own race and civilization. Now, as Clausewitz wrote, war is simply politics by other means. But we cannot ignore what's going on in the wider world, and what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and Egypt and Israel and Palestine will have serious effects on our whole movement in times to come. The Northwest Movement, that is, which is the only one we have anymore and the only one worth worrying about. And before we go on, here's some more hillbilly music for you. Better recorded this time. This is Walter Forbes.
I warm you up, warm you, I say. I ain't got time to kiss you now. The mule's done run away. Al Johnson had an old gray mule. His name was Simon Slick. Back his ears and lift his tail. How that mule would kick. I warm you up. Time to kiss you now, and you let run away. Let's hear the story about a boy and a gal friend back up in the mountain. This is back in them days when they used to cord on mules, don't you know? This old feller's mule done got loose from the hitch rack. He's a trying to get his mule and his gal friend together for all he's worth and can't do nothing with it. That fella sure got some troubles. I warm you up, warm you, I holler. I tie a knot the old mule's tail just to hear him beller. Well, if I had a needle and thread fine as I could sew, I'd sew my sweetheart to my back and down the road I'd go. Oh, warm you up, warm you, I say. Ain't got time to kiss you now, the mule done run away. Make him brave, huh? There he is. He's talking to you now, sweetheart. I warm you up, this Liza, keep cool. Keep your seat, everyone, I'm messing with my mule. I warm you up. Warm you, I say. Ain't got time to kiss you now, the mule done run away. I warm you up, warm you, I say. Ain't got time to kiss you now, the mule done run away. Come back here, you bottom beard, law beard mule. Oh, you jughead. Oh, mule. Hey, mule. Wait, wait right there, Liza. I'll be right back. Whoa, mule. Let's go. Come on, mule.
The Germans, as always, have a word for the course that we have to adopt with relation to the Middle East wars and everything else. It's called Realpolitik. I think that's how you pronounce it. In other words, a politics based in the real world, not the virtual world of cyberspace or the dream world of pure ideology unencumbered by practical considerations. The world as it is, rather than as we would wish it to be. What are the Realpolitik principles we must follow in the establishment of the Northwest Republic? Well, first, at least 1,000 Class A white nationalists must come home, and come home now, while it's still possible to do so legally, and there's still an essentially sound economy here with jobs available. We have to get our first wave of settlers on the way now. I mean, really, not just tapping on computer keyboards. Secondly, we need to understand that our independence will not come about until the central government in Washington, D.C. is sufficiently weak so that it can no longer respond to political and paramilitary insurrection with overwhelming force. Now, that time is not yet, and it will not be for the immediately foreseeable future. although I do believe I can see a little bit of light on the horizon that may herald the approach of such a window of opportunity for us. Third, the wars of conquest in the Middle East are accelerating that degenerative process, and we need to be able to take advantage of that. The simple fact is that as the United States totters on the edge of bankruptcy and Ben Bernanke has started up the printing presses over there at the Federal Reserve, this country can no longer afford these endless wars. At some point in time, they're going to collapse and we're going to have a large pool of unemployed white military veterans to draw on. That situation is starting to pertain right now, which is one reason I keep yelling at you people to get a move on. We need to get this going up here so we can take advantage of that. Fourth, we need to worry about the short-term effects on ourselves of the impending crisis, including increased government surveillance and police powers, increased detention without trial, the institution of some kind of civilian version of the secret military tribunals for quote-unquote domestic terrorism, that's coming, and above all, the possible restriction of movement within the United States, either through total economic collapse when nobody can afford the gas to come here anymore, or through the initiation of a Soviet-style work permit and internal passport system. We've had some noises made about that. There have already been a few trial balloons sent up along this line in the form of proposals for a national ID card, the so-called Real ID Act, so forth and so on. Now, in theory, a long and costly foreign war is always good for revolutionaries, yes, but not now. We are simply too unprepared. If only we hadn't wasted all those years. God damn it. I'm sorry, where was I? The creation of a new nation state must be an act of realpolitik, i.e. it must be done on a real world basis and with real world strategies and tactics that have to apply. And in the real world, that may well mean that here in the Northwest, we may end up with more than a few of those strange bedfellows that real politics makes, including possibly Muslims at some point in the future. Now, I really hesitate to mention this because I can hear it now. Harold is just sucking up to the Arabs in the hopes that they'll give him money, blah, 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 blah. But while honesty may not always be the best policy, it's always mine. So guys, let's state the obvious here. There may come a time when it is in the interests of the Islamic world to open a second front here in North America. And when that time comes, it would be a good idea if we don't have a paper trail or a cyber trail of calling them sand niggers and ragheads. Now, in today's present atmosphere, it's probably better that I don't pursue this line of exposition any further, since I'm sure this show is being monitored by the secret police, but let me put it this way. I would never be dumb enough to do what William Pierce did and let somebody hand me $300,000 in a briefcase that I knew damned well came from an armored car robbery. But let's say some Muhammad or Ahmed were to pitch up and offer financing for a proper Northwest independence movement, a legal Northwest independence movement, let me emphasize. And let's say that I could be convinced it was on the level, that it wasn't an FBI sting, and that I could legally accept the funds. And I would take a hell of a lot of convincing, I promise you. Would I take it for the sake of securing the existence of my people and a future for white children? You bet your bippy I would. Nor is this unprecedented. Remember the trips that some of our people like James Warner and Don Andrews took to Libya in the late 1980s? Remember David Duke speaking at a revisionist conference in Iran? There's a story told about the Roman Emperor Vespasian. The imperial treasury was broke, but rather than impose a new tax, Vespasian actually opened the world's first chain of public pay toilets in all of Rome. His son Titus, who later became emperor himself, protested that this was a dirty way to raise funds, so Vespasian tossed him a nice, shiny silver denarius coin. "Is this not good silver?" he asked his son. "Yes," replied Titus. "That's odd," replied the emperor, "since it was crap this morning." So, is this one of my practical reasons for giving Muslims at least the negative moral support of not calling them names and not babbling about jihad terrorists? Yes, and I make no apology for it. Will it ever actually happen? Probably not. But why burn that particular bridge even if we may never come to it? Realpolitik, people. Realpolitics. Finally, there's another aspect of this that I want to deal with, and again, I apologize for the length of time I'm spending on this one topic, but it's necessary so that I can get everything said that I have to say and be done with it. Now, one of the best articles ever written in any movement publication or on any movement website was one by Edgar Steele called "It's the Jews, Stupid." In fact, I think I actually read this one out loud on this program some months ago. It's the Jews, stupid. That says it all. If there is one thing that is blindingly clear to everyone, it is that the Jews wanted these wars that we're in now. They spent almost the entire existence of the State of Israel trying to drag the United States into sending troops to the Middle East for them to hide behind, including attacking the USS Liberty in 1967 and trying to blame it on the Egyptians so as to drag the United States into the Six-Day War. The Jews are about to be overrun demographically as the Palestinians outbreed them almost 3-1, and it's essential that they have American cover for their policy of quote-unquote transfer, i.e. the mass deportation of the Palestinians from their own land. That's what Israeli policy has been aiming at for over 60 years now. The survival of our race and our civilization depends on two things and two things only. Those are a complete change in ourselves, including a fearless confrontation with the issue of our own character, and a spiritual transformation within the collective soul of our racially aware community. And secondly, we have to have a thoroughly internalized awareness of the overriding primary importance of the Jewish question as it affects our continued existence. No other issue of race, culture, religion, politics, or economics is so vitally central to our continued existence as a people as the Jewish question. The Jew is an infection in the body of humanity and the root cause of every disease we have, including the character issue, because what has made us weak and lazy and cowardly is our adoption of the Jewish worldview of pure materialism. It is not just our moral obligation to oppose the Jew in every aspect of life. It is an urgent requirement for our survival. Over the past century, we have failed to understand this overriding reality, and we failed to act on it, and we now see the result of that failure all around us. We have to oppose these constant lunatic wars in the Middle East for all the very reasons that the Jew so urgently desires them. We have to hasten the exit from the world stage of the bandit state of Israel through the Palestinian bomb and the Palestinian birth rate. We have to do everything possible to undermine and subvert the American regime that continues these stupid and pointless wars, because in it we see the Jews displaying their naked power over American foreign policy and their lust for blood and conquest and their just general messianic madness. It's inevitable that their madness sooner or later will make white people bleed. It's been doing that for the past 10 years now. The late Pastor Robert Miles once called Judaism not a race or a religion, but a state of mind, which is the best definition I've ever heard. And it's this state of mind we have to battle against with every weapon at our command. In the final analysis, we have to oppose these Middle Eastern wars against the Muslim world because it is the right thing to do. Because it doesn't matter what we think of Muslims. We simply don't have the right to do what we're doing to these people. We cannot afford to continue to allow the Jew to exercise this kind of world-destroying power. If that means that as a matter of tactics, not ideology, we have to lay off the sand nigger spiel for a while, then that much at least we can do. Remember, since 1948, it's their people who have been doing most of the dying. We may not love these people. We may find them ugly, and we may find their religion and their ways repugnant. But we can at least have the decency to look on at their heartbreaking sacrifice with the respect of silence. And when they do strike back at us, when they do strike back at the murderers of their children, as any race of people will do, however ineffectually, we can at least refrain from losing our sense of proportion and always remember why. And remember the fact that we started it all when we so spinelessly handed our government and our country over to the kike. We must never, ever lose sight of the little hook-nosed man behind the curtain. I know what you've been hearing tonight may not be exactly orthodox white nationalism in your eyes, but we have to understand that this is going to be a real-world event. And that if there is to be any hope at all for us to win, then at some point we're going to have to come to terms with realpolitik on this issue and no doubt a lot of others. Now, that's something we've never been very good at. We've never been good at living in the real world. We far prefer arguing about how many stormtroopers can dance on the head of a pin to the deadly serious business of revolution and nation building. And that's why we've been such wretched failures for the past 50 years. Now, if my attitude towards Muslims and my insistence on opposing a United States government which has gone insane really, honest to God, bothers some of you folks to the point where you simply can't get around it, then go ahead, write me off as a Jew agent or whatever you want to call it. I don't want to waste your time, and I don't want you wasting mine. But whatever you may think of me, the Northwest idea is valid. It's the only chance of success that we have for implementing the 14 words of David Lane. This isn't about me. It's about the Northwest Republic, and that is where everyone's loyalty has to lie. Now, if you're ready to get real and get on with it, stick around. I promise you it'll be one hell of a ride. Got a request for more Scandinavian black metal rock. And as it happens, we had a sample of that sent in by a listener. Now, the name of this group is Valkyria. I tried to find out something about them online, but all I could come up with is the video game of the same name, so I don't know where they're from. The title of this song is Notten Junger Schalv, and I have no idea on earth how you pronounce that or what it means. Anyway, here it is. I am essentially an optimist where the racial struggle is concerned. I mentioned that the other day in a conversation, and the person I was speaking to challenged me on that and asked me to say why. Well, there's a lot of reasons, but the main one is that I see very clearly one fact which escapes all liberals, and I regret to say a lot of movement people as well. Now, that is that the present system is incapable of solving anything. It has become too hardened in the arteries, too inefficient and cumbersome. The present system suffers from institutional senility and bureaucratization, which will eventually paralyze the liberal democratic state completely. Regardless of what happens with me or the party, or with all these anti-terrorist laws, or the Federal Reserve, or anything else, things are going to keep on going wrong, and things are going to keep on getting worse, if for no other reason than the fact that we got a really stupid nigger in the White House. No matter how clever the Jews who really run things are, that can't be easy trying to control an out-of-control empire running over a cliff with a stupid coon at the wheel who's glued in the driver's seat. It must be about like trying to drive while reaching over somebody's shoulders from behind, and that won't really work for too long. The downsizing and the disappearance of high-paying manufacturing jobs to the third world that's been largely responsible for wrecking the economy is going to continue. Those jobs are never coming back. Job security of any kind now belongs as much to the past as the Second World War. It's part of a whole world that's long gone. Uncontrolled and massive third world immigration will continue despite the efforts of individual states like Arizona and individual politicians to control it. The conservatives can't deliver the goods along that line, and both the U.S. and the Canada now lack either the political will or the strength and the capability to stop it. And they damn sure lack the political will to kick out the muds who are already here. Millions of white Americans have lost their homes to foreclosure, and even if they manage to avoid unemployment, they're going to be renters all their lives from now on. The social and the economic wreckage that has been wrought by drugs and crime in this country is incalculable, and that's going to keep on and get worse. The present crushing taxation will continue and grow until it's an unlivable burden. Tax evasion is going to become the national pastime of both North American countries. And don't even talk to me about Obamacare. In a few years' time, I and millions of other Americans are going to be wanted criminals because I can't afford $15,000 per year for Obamacare, and I can't pay any fines either. And I know most of you are in the same boat. Millions of white people are going to be in violation of the law. The vile corruption of our moral and social values that's vomited forth into our homes by Hollywood and television is only going to grow worse. Racial attacks against whites will increase exponentially, however they may be disguised as ordinary crime by the media. Sodomy and perversion will run even more rampant as these creatures use their final acceptance into the military to consolidate their power and force their filthy perversions on all of us, especially finding new ways to gain access to children. That's how homos reproduce. And now that they're in the saddle, no pun intended, that's how they're going to reproduce from now on, openly. There will be, at some point, an attack on Iran that will cause the world economy to grind even more to a halt than it is now when the Straits of Hormuz are closed and the world loses about a third of its oil supply. Food shortages are going to get worse. Food prices will rise until whites won't even be able to afford to eat out at Mickey D's anymore. Political correctness is a failed philosophy. It offers no solutions except more of the same and, recently, to demonize and silence and imprison anyone who dissents. The evil people who rule us are losing control, and they know it, and they're starting to panic. Panicky people make stupid mistakes. Panic and an unworkable worldview are a bad combination. Liberals have a very strange view of guys like me, but one which is consistent with their ideology. They seem to think that we're just sort of appear out of thin air one day, that every one of us is some sort of isolated glitch in the gorgeous mosaic due to our bad childhood or whatever, and that if we can just be silenced and taken out of the picture, then everything will be beautiful again. Liberals believe that the tooth fairy or the magic Negro will come down from the planet's soul and save them. Liberals believe that the white masses will forever remain docile, that we're never going to use those guns we've got in our closet. And one day they're going to create this wonderful PC paradise where everybody lies around grazing in the grass, watched over by their kindly and compassionate liberal and Jewish shepherds, who of course know so much better than the people themselves what's good for them. What liberals don't understand is that white nationalists usually base their beliefs on the observed behavior of blacks, Jews, and the government. We have a saying in the South, "Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining." Well, that essentially is what liberalism does. They've built a whole political and moral philosophy on the principle of pissing down people's backs and telling them it's raining. I think the establishment always fooled a lot fewer people than they thought. But as long as there was a reasonable facsimile of prosperity, all they got was grousing and a few million more Republican votes by way of useless protest. But that situation is changing as the Western world continues to decay under the brunt of over a century of liberal and Jewish control. Now, you may have noticed that nowadays the system spends most of its time running around trying to plug holes in the dike, but the leaks keep springing out and eventually the little liberal Dutch boy is going to run out of fingers. I think some of them have enough intelligence to realize that they're losing. Their fight was supposed to have been won back in the 30s through the 60s. These were supposed to be their golden years of love and brotherhood and like, peace, man, let the sun shine in, far out, man. But it hasn't turned out that way. Liberalism has succeeded in transforming human society into its own image, but it has not and never will succeed in changing the nature of man. They cannot change that nature because they've never understood it. The liberals never wanted to understand human nature because the truth is in direct contradiction to their ideological obsessions about race and economics and human relationships. So like liberals do, they simply airbrushed the truth out of the picture and pretended that it doesn't exist. They've failed, and they're going down, permanently, and within our lifetimes. What will follow is a matter of legitimate and urgent debate, but I still remain convinced that someday it will be our turn. And our turn will come right here in the Northwest homeland, when we finally strike for freedom and a future for white children. You all need to get your asses here in time to be a part of that. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.